Okay, Parshas Tetzaveh, perhaps the most important and most identified issue concerning Parshas Tetzaveh is not what is contained within the Parsha, but what is not. The Baal HaTurim points out that the name of Moshe Rabbeinu does not appear in this Parsha. In partial fulfillment of Moshe Rabbeinu's comment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Imayin Mecheni Nami Sifrecha Asher Kasafta, that if you don't forgive Bnei Yisrael, then you need to wipe out my name out of the Torah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu fulfills the wishes of a tzaddik, and so therefore, by in Parshas Tetzaveh, Moshe Rabbeinu's name does not appear. So my Yeridei Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Genek Shalita, once explained to us that the Parsha of Tetzaveh was selected to be the Parsha that did not have Moshe's name is because that Parsha deals with the Big Day Kahuna. Our Parsha highlights the building of the Big Day Kahuna, the creation of the Big Day Kahuna. The Big Day Kahuna serve as Big Day Malchus. They're the signs that give the individual their significance. Like the Gemara says, Bizman Shebigdeim Aleihem, Kahunasam Aleihem, when they're wearing their Begadim, so their Kahuna is on them. And so Moshe, as a leader, did not need Big Day Kahuna or bar that way for Big Day Malchus for his ability to rule. So his being was more important than the Begadim. So Rabbi Genak said, if you needed a Parsha where it wasn't Shaykh to have Moshe Rabbeinu's name, it would be Parshas Tetzaveh, and indeed Moshe's name doesn't appear here. Anyway, the Parsha begins, V'ato Tetzaveh. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky once explained that the word V'ato appears almost superfluous. And this is based on the rules of Hebrew grammar. It should just be Tetzaveh B'nei Yisrael. It would be implied 100% Ve'ata by definition. Mi Tetzaveh, Mi Tetzaveh, it must be Ve'ata. So why do we need to begin the parasha with the word Ve'ata? So Rav Yaakov explained that the only time that the word Ve'ata is utilized is when it's used to the exclusion of other, it's you to the exclusion of all others. And that's what's happening here too. While Parshas Truma noted that Bnei Yisrael was supposed to share in the building of the Mishkan, Tetzaveh was a command to Moshe Rabbeinu to the exclusion of Bnei Yisrael. The building of the Mishkan involved the creation of the Chomer, the gathering of the Chomer. Tetzaveh highlights the attachment of Tzura to the Chomer, which is the Truma. And so therefore, Ata Tetzaveh, it's going to be you and not Bnei Yisrael that are going to go ahead and proceed in this week's Sedra. And the oil was supposed to be me erev ad boker, from night until day. And Rashi explains that kimi dasa, you need to put in enough oil, kimi dasa, that it should illuminate from night until dawn. So the late great author of the Lahoros Nasan, Rav Nasan Gestetner, Zechat Tzadok Livracha, explained to his family that a person needs to make sure to study Torah in such a way that it is kimi dasa, that one studies Torah in such a way that it would remain with him even in darkness. That the light here refers to the light of Torah, which needs to illuminate in the darkness, even when Rav Nasan described as the world of business. Interesting, carrying the theme forward, so we had a pleasure of hosting my dear friend Rabbi Shai Shechter Shabbos in our shul, and in the context of his drasha, he mentioned that one of the key psukim in Parshas Mishpatim, which really highlights the concepts contained in the book of Shemos, is Va'anche Kodesh Tion Li Ubasar Basadet Trefalo Sochelo. And Rosh Echter asked the question, why is the command Anche Kodesh brought down where? In the context of not eating Nevela in the field. So Rosh Echter explained that the answer is very simple. It's very simple for an individual to be an Ish Kodesh when he's in the Beis Medrash. The real job of being Anche Kodesh is not only when one's in the Beis HaMedrash. It's not only when he is in the holy places. A person has to be Kodesh even when he's in a place of Chol and make sure that Basar Basade Trefalo Sochelu. When you're out in the field, meat that's not kosher is not kosher when you're out in the field as well. Me'er Avad Boker. This begins only when a person develops enough study of Torah to illuminate from night until day. Okay. We're told, V'yasisa Big Day Kodesh le'Aaron achicha l'chavod l'sifares. You're supposed to make the Big Day Kahuna for Aaron, your brother, for honor and splendor or glory. So Volbi Zechat Tzadok Livrocha noted that the concepts of kavod and tiferes are not synonymous. Kavod refers to revelation within nature, while tiferes refers to that which transcends nature, like a miracle, which transcends nature. And both existed in the Mishkan. Well, on the one hand, there was much that was miraculous and supernatural in the Mishkan. At the same time, it was a place where the glory of Hashem permeated in daily functioning too, bringing the honor there. Then there were the series of the Big Day Kahuna that existed. Among the Begadim that were identified were a Mitznefes. That was for the Kohen Gadol. But a Kohen Ragya wore a Mikbas. And the question is, are the two garments the same? They both appear to be some sort of hat. So Tosfos in Yuma points out that since the Kohen Gadol had to wear the tzitz, it was likely that the hat and the mitznefes of the Kohen Gadol had to be smaller than the mikbas. So Rosh Hashanah used to tell us that the bigger the Kohen, the smaller the hat. You see that no matter, the Kohen Gadol wore a smaller hat than the others. And the fact is that the wearer needs to have the sensation of his tefillin shel rosh. Since the Kohen Gadol needed to place his tefillin shel rosh higher, right, on top of his head, because he also had to have room for the tzitz, and there had to be a space between the tzitz and the tefillin shel rosh, so the hat that he wore on his head had to be smaller. It's not so much the hat for the image, it's the hat for its effect. And Rav Soloveitchik used to say the same thing, you have to feel the tefillin if you're going to be able to function. Towards the end of the parsha, so we're told about the Korban HaTomid, that this is what you're going to bring on the Mizbeach, two kvasim that are B'nai Shana, that are 1 year old, Shnayim Layom, twice a day, Tamid, forevermore. So the question has to be raised, why is it that the Korban HaTomid is mentioned here in the context of building the Mishkan? Doesn't it belong where all the other Korbanos are mentioned? In the book of Vayikra or in Parshas Pinchas, which is, by the way, where it does appear a second time. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Shalita explains that there are two aspects to the bringing of a Korban Tamid. One is in the fact that it's the raison d'etre of the Mishkan. Without having a Korban HaTamid, so the construction of just an empty house makes no sense. At the same time, it's a Korban, and it has responsibilities to atone for specific sins. The dual nature explains why this Korban appears in two places. So Rav Lichtenstein explains that each aspect is being highlighted. He explains, the dual nature also explains why is what we call a klal gadol b'Torah, probably the important rule of the Torah. For, says Rav Lichtenstein, when one lives the daily grind and sees that it's the daily grind that is the backbone of the toil in Avodas Hashem, that's the greatest klal in the Torah. It's not just about the highlights, it's not just about the Purims and the Simchas Torahs and all the others, and even the dirges of a Tisha B'Av or the Hatmaras of a Yom Kippur. Yiddishkeit is important every single day of the year, and it's those days of the year that really build us up. At the end of the Seder, we're told we have to make a Mizbeach for the Ketores. And the question has to be raised, why is it that the command to make the Menorah, the Shulchan, and the Aron appear in Parshas Truma before the building of the Mishkan, while the other Kalim only appear after the building of the Mishkan? Sir Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, whose Yahrzeit is coming this week, suggested that when one builds a building, he must know what the purpose of the building is. The Mishkan also needed a purpose stated in order to allow the Shekhinah to dwell in the new edifice. And thus, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Aron, which refers to Torah, and the Shulchan, which is symbolic of Tzedakah and Gemilas Chesed, were commissioned first. However, in order for the mission to be pure and on point, it needed illumination from Rabbanim to make sure that the Torah and the Tzedakah would indeed be pure. And so therefore, the menorah also had to be present before the project was begun. That is to say, the menorah, the Aron, and the Shulchan all were there to declare purpose for the other issues at hand. Okay. This week is Parshas Zachor, which means, of course, the Haftorah also is going to be the episode of Shaul HaMelech, and the way that Shaul HaMelech handled the situation with Agag. And right before Shmuel comes ahead and kills the king of Amalek, Agag, he tells him, "Kasher shikla nashim charbecha, kein tishkal minashim imecha." right? In the same way the women tasted your sword, so too your mother should also continue to suffer in the same way. And it appears from the pasuk that Agag's mother was still alive. Now, she was an Amaleki, why was she left alive? So Chaim Kanievsky Shlita explains that clearly she was not an Amaleki. She was from a different nation, and she had married in to an Amalekite. And based on this, the Balei HaTosas Ala Torah in Parshas B'Shalach explained that at the time that Shaul held Agag in prison overnight, Agag had relations with a donkey that turned out to be a woman who described herself using witchcraft, which Rashi in Shmuel Aleph explains was a trait of the Amaleko, and that their women knew how to use witchcraft to transform themselves into animals. Question has to be raised, if that were the case, how come the woman was still alive to be able to have relations with Agag? So, again, based on Reb Chaim Kanievsky's thought, that woman had to be somebody who had married a different Amaleki. She wasn't an Amalekite, she wasn't killed. She was the one who changed herself and helped perpetuate the Amalekite nation that you can live with among the people and learn from their practice, but not actually be an Amalekis. This was one of the errors that Shmuel had, which led to the episodes of the Purim story. Shabbat Shalom to all.